I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's Zach Zaidman on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. I'm here until 5 o'clock, and what a treat. I miss this. I spent every game this season of Cubs baseball sitting off to the side, guarded by plexiglass, looking at this man's face all throughout the season and listening to the greatness that is Ron Coomer and Pat Hughes calling Cubs baseball here on The Score. And the Coomdar joins us now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Coom, how are you, my friend? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Double Z. How are you, brother? You know, I same here. You know, it's in our sport, you know, when you're a playoff team, as you know, and we've experienced some good and some bad, the season is so abrupt, right? The ending of it is like we're going and it just gets ends, bang, right then and there. And you were still doing an hour worth of post game, and a good partner would have probably stuck around and said goodbye, but I'm not that good a partner and I left. But no, you know, you were doing, but no, you know, I mean, it just is. I joke, but yeah, we had a great year together, all of us in our booth. And yeah, it does. It's an abrupt halt to a season, but you know, we had a lot of fun, and as always, you and I enjoy what we do along with Pat and Paul Zerang this year and Richie. So yeah, it was a great season, but miss you, buddy, absolutely. And I love listening to you and Tommy talk. It was like, you know, not that I want to go back to the COVID days where we were, you know, not playing any sports, but it was fun to listen to you guys.
Yeah, I'm going to try and get you guys on a little bit more often throughout the off season, like we did during the summer, because I just enjoy the conversation. And thankfully, we actually have some sports to talk about. But getting back to your point, you're so right, man. When a season ends unexpectedly, when you have high expectations heading into the postseason, and all of a sudden, bam, it ends the way it did, it stinks. I don't blame you for walking out of the booth when the season ended and leaving, because it was tough to process what we had watched against Miami, the way the Marlins were able to win. And we kind of saw the Cubs offense struggling down the stretch of this regular season. But based on that last regular season weekend against the White Sox, when you saw some of the big bats come alive, I think for them to revert back to what we saw in the two games against the Marlins, it's still to this day, it hits you because of the way the Cubs starting staff performed and because of the way the Cubs bullpen performed. You figured that maybe this year was going to be a little bit different.
Yeah, you did. And, you know, going in, as you and I know, in March last year, when we were doing games together in Mesa, we looked at the offense of the Chicago Cubs and said, well, that's the strength of the team, you know, and the bullpen's going to be, you know, something that they're going to work on, and it's going to be one of those things that it'll be constantly tweaked and see where you go from there. And the starting rotation was a veteran group. Well, they figured all that part out. They figured out the bullpen for the last month of the season and actually did a very nice job. And Kimbrel, to his credit, figured it out. The rotation with the veteran pitchers, even though they had injuries, Really figured it out. Millsy took a big step forward, which was really great to see. Johnny did what he does, and the rest of the group were outstanding. But the offense really struggled. And to me, that was, you know, one of those things that's really tough to deal with sometimes when you write down, as we do every day, the lineup, and you write down names that have won World Series, that have been MVPs, that are perennial All-Stars, and people that are basically, you know, in front of the league, right? They're part of the advertisement of promoting professional baseball and Major League Baseball, and yet the struggles that happen, it was a tough one. It was a tough one to deal with for them, I'm sure, and it's a tough one now in listening to the Cubs organization and talking, and it was a tough one for us to see from the broadcast booth.
Yeah, you know, in thinking back, if I would have told you during what they called summer camp, spring training version 2.0, if I would have told you during that portion, guess what? Ian Happ is going to be back and give you a terrific season. Jason Hayward is probably going to have his best offensive season as a Cub. David Bodie was going to be fantastic in his unique role with the team. You're thinking, that's it, right? The complementary pieces to the big bats are there. And I haven't even talked about the bullpen, the way it looked.
Right.
You're thinking, this is a team that's primed to take that next step. And yet it is stunning to me that the heart of the lineup, the big names that we've become so accustomed to watching play big, whether it's Baez or Bryant or Rizzo or Schwarber, Contreras, those are the guys that let you down. And, you know, in listening to what Theo Epstein had to say following the season, that's kind of where he put the focus. You know, there's been this thought that the Cubs need more balance in their lineup, that they really need to find a true replacement for what Dexter Fowler was back in 2016. They need to find a little bit more balance in the lineup, you know, maybe get a guy that can do what Ben Zobrist was able to do in his heyday. But no, in listening to Theo, he needs to have a core that does the job of the core better than the core did in 2020.
That's right. And you know, you can say what you want about the leadoff spot and the issues that it's had for the Cubs, but this year that wasn't really the issue. You know, Ian Happ, after probably the first 2 weeks, got moved up into that slot when KB got injured. I think Tony hit there one day, did Anthony, and then Ian got put in there and stayed there most of the year and did a fine job. You know, perfect. No problem. He had a very, very nice year and made some great strides, I thought, offensively. But at the end of the day, the approaches of the Cubs core in the middle of the lineup, to me, broke down. And it broke down in a very bad way. And they were unable to make the adjustment for the most part. I can say Anthony, towards the end of the season, put in a lot of work, a lot of extra work at the end of the year in revamping the approach of his stroke, of his swing. And it showed, even though it might not have showed in batting average, but it showed in how many hard hit line drives he hit, even though sometimes he hit into the shift. But the hard part was, you know, Kyle, you know, really struggled and hit around 200. KB, the same thing. He had a little spurt of, you know, using the whole field, but then struggled. Javi struggled mightily, chasing the breaking ball away and just couldn't get out of that pattern. And then the guy that really shocked me, who had his struggles but wasn't terrible, was Contreras, who might have been the hottest hitter in baseball in July. The only problem with that was, you know, that was a spring training 2.0. It wasn't the regular season. And he was hitting the ball as well as I've ever seen him hit it. And then as the season progressed, he, you know, fell into some issues too of chasing some bad pitches. It might have been a little tired. Also, so you just don't know, but there's got to be some revamping with approaches and the mindset of how the star hitters for the Chicago Cubs, whoever that's going to be this year, whoever may, you know, remains on this ball club, they've got to revamp their approach to hitting because what was happening this year just wasn't very good.
Talking Cubs baseball with Ron Coomer, and we'll talk Major League Baseball and a little bit about the White Sox, too. There's so much to get to, but, you know, last one on the Cubs. I think Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer have a really tough job from the standpoint that we know there are going to be changes. Unlike the last few years, I think Theo seemed almost resigned at the end of the year to saying, you know what, we can't continue to do this. It's we need to make changes to the core that we've become accustomed to. And then the other thing is that this was a unique season for a variety of different reasons,
yep,
but it was also a 60-game season. So when you're an evaluator, how do you properly judge who still has it, who doesn't, what was a legitimate step backwards, what was just due to the fact that it wasn't a normal season? How do you go about making those determinations?
Well, and then you've also got the financial side too, Zach. You can't, you know, turn a blind eye to the financial side of our business and who's making what and what their value is on the open market. And are you able to move certain pieces? So that's going to be a very big factor also. My way of looking at this, if I were a hitting coach, which I try to be in the booth, but I definitely am not down on the field. So, you know, but I look at it and I evaluate who you have and are they able to make adjustments in their approach to hitting and get back to the hitter they once were or get back to being a very good quality big league hitter, not just a home run threat and you're going to hit 180 to 210. That just doesn't get it done, and we found that out. Mm-hmm. So that would be my first evaluation. So, A, can certain guys make an adjustment in their approach? Mechanically, do they understand the swing enough to be able to make that adjustment? I think Anthony's definitely a guy that we saw could do that. He shortens up, blah, blah, blah. But that would be the first thing I would look at. Who do I have that I think can hit and make the adjustment to getting back to being a quality big league hitter? Because just because you run the ball out of the ballpark does not make you a quality big league hitter. We're seeing that right now in the playoffs. How many games, there's been some games where the home run ball has been a major factor. There's been a lot of games where, you know, what's been said of getting 3, 4, 5 hits in an inning weren't ever going to happen. It's happening. It is. So you got to find out how to do that again, like, you know, and being able to use the whole field and shortening swings and taking what the pitcher will give you. All of those things that have not been talked about for quite a few years now are all of a sudden, like we once said, baseball, it will come back to what we always have done, no matter how, what you think. You know, old school hitting and the approaches of the way you swing the bat, it's coming back. It just is, and we knew it was gonna.
But to get to this point, man, you need to play Powerball. You know what I mean? I think that's where the analytics take over. You don't get into this position to play the kind of small ball you need to play in order to win a championship unless you have a regular season where guys are jacking the ball out of the yard, you know, the way the Dodgers were, all these teams that
ended up getting this far. When you have talented hitters like the Cubs do and the Dodgers do and Atlanta does, all these guys, you have to have the ability to be both guys, right? And we're seeing it with the Astros. They're hitting a bunch of bombs and they've won some games, but they've also strung together 5, 6, 7 hits and walks in an inning with a dominant pitcher and are able to use the whole field. You look at Atlanta and why they've been able to do that against the Dodgers. You look at a guy like Freddie Freeman in the last couple games, you know, when they need a base hit and they're shifting him, he's just rolling a ground ball towards the third baseman or shortstop and it's driving in two runs. You've got to be both guys. I'm not saying that the home run ball should go away. By no means should that go away. Mm-hmm. But you've got to be able to adjust your approach in the batter's box to doing what a team needs to be successful. And the more guys you have that can do that, the more opportunity you have to winning games.
You know, you mentioned Atlanta and the Dodgers and that series. What stands out to you about what Houston has been able to do so far? Just getting to a point where the Astros have forced a game 7 after being down 3-0.
To me, they needed something to happen. You know, everything was going Tampa's way. the first three ball games and all the big hits and, you know, beating the shifts with ground balls through the infield and the bloopers were falling. Everything was happening positive for Tampa. And then all of a sudden, you know, a couple big swings of the bat. Altuve has the errors in the one game and can't throw the ball. The next day he comes back. They put him in the lineup and put him out there on defense to Dusty Baker, tip of the hat to doing that. And he hits two bombs and he has a big offensive day. So they needed something to happen and they found it. And now this, you know, whether you like them, dislike them, hate them, whatever the case may be with the Astros, they're a very talented group and they're a very confident group. And right now their confidence is on high. After the walk-off home run two games ago, they put up numbers yesterday, and you know they're going to put up numbers again today. They are. So you're going to have to outbang the Astros today to win.
All right. I've got a lot of questions about Tony La Russa for you.
Can we, I was waiting how long that was going to take.
And I'm not the only one. Man, you know what? Let's take a break here real quick. Come back and talk about Tony La Russa. I'm stunned at the reaction to his name being floated as the number one guy that the White Sox are looking at as their potential new manager. So let's take a quick break here. We'll come back and get the Coom Dogs take. Ron Coomer is with us. I'm Zach Zabin. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Russo, you know, had so much success, speaks fluent Spanish. So, you know, a bright guy. And, you know, he likes analytics, too. I mean, he was doing the analytics stuff before it was even called that. And you know, all these guys are open to ideas. There's not a manager in baseball now, you know, that isn't embraced with the analytics or at least listen to what the front office says. Even Bruce Bochy at the end. I mean, there's guys that didn't come up that way, but everyone's, you know, taking that knowledge now and doing it, you know, combining it with their own savvy.
That is USA Today's baseball man, Bob Nightingale, as dialed in as anyone in the game today, talking about Tony La Russa earlier this week on The Score. And La Russa has emerged as the front runner for the White Sox managerial vacancy. Essentially, it's his if he wants it. Zach Zabin joined by Ron Coomer here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. And there's been a negative reaction on social media, in the papers, on The Score, when it comes to Tony La Russa. I know he's 76 years old. I know he hasn't managed a game since 2011. But it's not as though, and I said this earlier on the show, Coom, it's not as though he's been on some resort island sipping pina coladas, not following the game of baseball. I mean, he's been actively involved with three different franchises in different front office roles, whether it's Arizona, right, Boston, and remember, the Red Sox won a championship in 2018, and most recently with the Angels. So he is very much dialed in when it comes to this new wave of baseball. Are you surprised about the negative reaction to his name being floated?
Here, let me say this. I'm surprised that he was looking to do this again. That's the part that surprised me.
Okay.
That I will say, but that has a totally different meaning than being surprised that he's a good candidate than Jerry Reinsdorf would want him. I am surprised, I guess, that there's so much negative talk about Tony being the White Sox manager. And I laughed, to be quite honest. And I'm pretty direct when it comes to some of this, Z, and sometimes it gets me in trouble. But when I hear people, you know, say, well, he's too old and he doesn't know the current player and he doesn't know how to deal with the way the game's being played now. Seriously? That's people that sit somewhere and have no clue of what they're talking about. Tony La Russa dealt with the star bat flipping superstar, you know, before anybody else did. I don't know if people realize it or not, but his left fielder in Oakland was Ricky Henderson, who picked the jersey, you know, almost got to the dugout going to first base on a leadoff home run. I mean, there's nobody that did any of the bat flipping more than Rico. And then, oh, by the way, the number three hitter in that lineup was Jose Canseco. And all the circus around Hosey was incredible too. So, and then he just had Mark McGwire hitting cleanup. So he had his experiences with some of this stuff long before it was popular to talk about and before it was put out in front of Major League Baseball. And then, oh, by the way, he was the manager in 98 during the McGwire Sosa circus of all the home runs. So Tony's dealt with all this for his entire baseball career as a manager. So in that regard, not a problem. What he'll probably be able to do is help some of these young kids focus on when, how, and what to do, as opposed to just flying off and doing different things without meaning. And so I, you know, all that being said, Tony's been around that longer than anybody else that I know at a high level. So that part will be fine. Energy, when you see Tony around the ballpark, we saw him in Arizona many times doing Cubs games against the Diamondbacks. Tony's energy level and all that is going to be just fine. And I don't see that being at all a problem with him. And then last, the understanding of the game and how to win. Is there a better guy in the league? I mean, you could make a case for Francona. You could make a case for Bruce Bochy, who's not managing right now. That's a possibility who's out there. You could make a case for Joe Maddon, our old manager. He's done incredible things. And Tony. I mean, who else could you throw into that group that's won the way they've won? So I just think it's a move that was shocking, and I understand the shock value because he kind of pulled his name out of the league as far as managing. But, boy, when you start talking about winning and understanding how to win and what to do, and I don't know if there's many people better in our league than Tony La Russa.
He's number three on the all-time wins list for managers. You don't get there,
right? I mean,
if you're not one of the best, smartest, and most innovative guys over the course of a long career.
I just don't understand that, you know, the 70, you know, mid-70s, okay, that's the one thing I could say, yep, that's that can create an issue. No problem at all with people questioning that part, and I'm sure he would say the same thing. If that were, you know, the sticking point, okay, fine. Outside of that, I don't see anything that would be a hindrance to Tony La Russa being the manager. He's dealt with it all and has dealt with it maybe better than anybody else in baseball over these last 35, 40 years. Pretty good.
And one of the best managers of a bullpen that this game has seen. I mean, he was on the cutting edge of the way the game is played today. It's because of guys like Tony La Russa that the game changed the way it has in
well,
terms
see,
of
the
that
pitch count, that's a Tony thing. Tony and Dunk, that's a Tony thing. Tony had a guy like Dave Stewart and Bobby Welch who were at the top of his rotation in Oakland who could dominate a game and pitch deep in a game. Then what he would always do is his number fifth starter was maybe a Storm Davis or a guy like that who was at the tail end of his career who was a five innings possibly and out of the game. Well, Tony understood how to put together a rotation to where I got two studs at the top that I'm going to lean on. They're going to pitch seven innings, and I'm just going to give them the ball. And don't look in the dugout. You've got it. Seven innings, you can start looking this way. Other than that, and then I'm going to protect my back of the bullpen with, you know, that those long reliever guys that I'm not going to have to use in game one and two of the rotation cycle. Tony knew all that. He also knew the bullpen, and he took a guy like Dennis Eckersley, who was dominant as a starter and turned him into the best closers in all of baseball. I mean, he's just done so many innovative things too that, and he just has. And to me, if you're a White Sox fan and you get names thrown out there to manage your team, would you rather have a guy that's got a total black eye for what has gone on with our game here in the recent years? Or would you rather have a guy who's got championship rings on his finger and has done it right for years and years and years? That's my question to the city.
To me, when I heard the initial pushback, like after you get over the shock, like because Tony La Russa wasn't a name that you would even start to consider as a possibility. But once his name was floated, the thing that kind of stood out to me is, would the White Sox be a better team under Tony La Russa than they were under Rick Renteria? And I'm not ripping Renteria, but come on, the answer is obvious.
The answer is yes.
And then the other thing is, I would say that it's less of a risk than what the Cubs did last offseason when they hired David Ross to be their manager. You know, Ross is the one without any managerial experience or coaching experience, and had spent a little bit of time working in a pseudo front office role, kind of learning the way things are and being a broadcaster as well. But that was more of a risk replacing Joe Maddon with David Ross than, say, this, if Tony La Russa is indeed the guy on the south side.
When you pencil in Tony La Russa as your manager, you invite all of your scouts and all of your front office people who do all the math and do all of those things, and you invite them all in a room, and you give Tony all this information, because for some reason people seem to think that he wouldn't want to use all this information that's given to you, which to me is, I can't even fathom that people would say that, because it just makes no sense whatsoever. But you put them all in a room, you let Tony decipher what he likes to use, what he doesn't, what has been successful for him and what hasn't. And some of this new information might be unique to the White Sox in how they go about it, but you give him all of these tools, and then you say, okay, now you've been as good as anybody in our game in the modern era of dealing with people and getting teams to win and being a playoff manager. Go do what you're great at, and let's see where the chips fall. To be quite honest with you, I think it's genius of Jerry Reinsdorf to pull Tony, you know, from the front office somewhere else and possibly try to run him out there as your manager. I really do.
Yeah, I was joking earlier in the show. This is not like when the Blackhawks hired Alpo Suhonen and brought him from Europe to try and coach the NHL game. It's not like the Bears bringing Mark Trestman from the CFL to replace Lovie Smith. It's not like the Bulls hiring Jim Boylan to be their head coach. I mean, this is a guy who is a documented, proven champion, a winner, and he didn't do it by luck. He didn't do it by cheating. I mean, we're talking about sustained success and innovation over the course of his career. And again, like I said earlier, it's not like he's been on some deserted island enjoying retirement. He's been involved in the game. Just we haven't seen him because he hasn't been in the dugout. But when you're involved in the front office of three different organizations from the time that he stepped down as manager, you're talking about a guy who clearly has been invested in all the analytics and all the information that you were talking about earlier. Our final few moments here with the Coombdog on the Score. Now I want to put your baseball background and your business background and blend them together here, because I've been thinking a lot about this, you know, after the NBA season ended, and I'm sure you've taken a notice that, you know, the ratings for all these sports that have been played have all been down. And that's been unexpected, and there are a number of different reasons for it, but business talks when it comes to professional sports. And we're still in a situation where there's no vaccine, and there are many states and cities that do not allow fans to attend games. Is this sustainable? From a baseball standpoint, heading into next season, will the owners want to have a full season? I think we took it for granted and thought, all right, next year you're just going to, this was a unique year, 2020, and in 2021 we're going to have a full season. But can the owners do that without losing money? And do you think there will be a group of owners that say, you know what, time out, this, we can't do this. We can't put games on and make money if we can't have fans in the stadiums. And do they try to shut down the game next year if things haven't improved from a scientific and medical standpoint?
Well, it's a great question. I don't think anybody has the answer. I do think there will be baseball played next year. There has been rumblings through the baseball community about shortening the season, in particularly when it comes to the medical side of this, and when do we have a vaccine? When do we have this, the drugs that can help the symptoms of this virus, right? You may not be able to cure it because it is a virus. And when you talk to medical people, you know, it's like the flu. They keep coming up with different strands and different ways of getting rid of symptoms. But, you know, you're not necessarily just going to get something that wipes it out. So when you know that you can protect people through a shot or through vaccines and through things to help the symptoms, you know, we're going to be in the same boat. So it would not surprise me at all if they shorten the season again next year, if that were the case, and you don't have the drugs. I don't think we're going to get this answer, though, Z, till a lot closer to spring training. I really don't. I don't think you can, because you have to give these companies, these Abbott Labs and you know, all these companies that are working, you know, crazily to try to come up with something that's going to help. When they come up with these vaccines and these drugs that we think can really make an impact on how people are, we're going to still be in the same boat. I mean, you just look at the playoffs that we're dealing with now in California, no fans. And in Texas, fans. And it's, you know, different hot spots in different areas. You know, you're gonna be hot, cold, whether you can have fans in there or not. And, you know, so we'll have to see. Baseball will be played because I really believe the owners and the players eventually will come to some kind of solution to what to do, because this is very unique. But I can promise you this, it won't be easy again. If we don't have a vaccine going into April or into spring training, it's going to be an issue again, and these negotiations are going to be very difficult. They just are.
And then the other part of it that makes it very difficult, and going back to where we started earlier with Theo Epstein and how you transform the Cubs, and I'm just using that one team as an example, it's kind of hard to make big sweeping changes during an off season when you don't know how many games are going to be played. You don't know what your budget is going to be because of that very reason, if fans are going to be allowed in the stands and all that kind of stuff. You don't know how many teams are going to be eligible for the playoffs. And your time frame to actually make moves may shrink because of all those unknowns. So you may not be able to make the kind of real changes you'd like to over the course of an off season if you're trying to construct a ball club.
Right. And my thought is what you're going to, if this continues on for the next baseball season, what you're probably going to see is you're going to see the haves and the have-nots, right? A team like the White Sox, who have a bunch of young players under control that salary is low, they're in the best position possible. The teams that have a bunch of high-priced players that were looking to make some moves this year, they're in a tough spot because what do you do? Do you unload salary and hope that the young guys do their job? So the bottom line makes more sense. So I really believe you're going to see more separation between the haves and the have-nots of Major League Baseball, because some of these teams just won't be able to sustain, you know, keeping, you know, some of their higher priced players on the field. I just don't. They're not going to do it. It's just going to, they're going to be released, they're going to be let go, and you're not going to see the big free agent contract. You're going to see guys signing with the big market clubs to one-year deals, and that's kind of what you kind of, what I see coming up here in the future of our game, maybe in this next season.
Yeah, it's a lot more fun to talk about the actual games than this part of it, but it's a big part of the reality.
It's reality.
Yep. Coom, thank you so much. Always appreciate the time. By the way, I hope your fantasy team is doing well.
We are doing just fine, buddy. We got a little help this year, you know, because we had Schultze come in who pulled the first pick of the draft. That was a big plus. Z, you were on the horn. We were doing our normal Sunday draft, and you were there. So the Coom Dogs are doing very well, and hopefully Tommy and – and Jeff will call a Bears win tomorrow, and we'll be in good shape. But miss you, buddy.
Yeah, miss you too. Take care, and we'll chat real soon. Ron Coomer, Cubs radio analyst, and much, much more, spending time with us talking about the real serious side of baseball. And, man, it's going to be an interesting offseason just because there's so much uncertainty that has carried over from the start of this season. You just don't know what kind of landscape you're going to have. 312-644-6767 is the phone number. Going to take a break here, but when we come back, I want to hear from you because you just heard a passionate defense of why the White Sox would be making a terrific hire in bringing back Tony La Russa as manager. So why the negative reaction that we've heard this week via social media and here on The Score? Why are you guys so down on Tony La Russa? 312-644-6767. Zach Zaidman with you. Your call's next. We'll hear from Joe Maddon at the top of the hour. All that's ahead on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
The White Sox are so close to being really good. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen with a couple of young pitchers in time, but I mean, they can find bullpens. We've seen that from all these teams in the playoffs. Most of the guys in the bullpen are guys that they picked up. You know, you just lined up like seven guys that got released in the minor leagues. They throw 95 miles an hour, teach them a couple of pitches, and they arrive. It's an amazing thing. But they can do that. I think he'd be very interesting.
That was Peter Gammons with Mully and Haw yesterday morning talking about a possibility of Tony La Russa taking over as White Sox manager. Zach Zaidman with you until 5 o'clock here on The Score. 312-644-6767. I'm stunned by the negative reaction to La Russa's name being floated as the front runner for the Sox job to replace Rick Renteria. It makes no sense to me why there's been such a negative reaction. 312-644-6767. And I'd like to know why. I'd like to know what about Tony La Russa's resume doesn't just pop off the page and make you say, man, this could be something. You know, when you team him up with a team that's got a terrific young nucleus, you know, why can't he take the White Sox to the next level? After the phones we go, Jeff in Lake Geneva, you're on The Score. Good afternoon, Jeff.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's up?
Well, I listen to your show quite a bit, but it's the first time I've ever called in. I got to tell you that I have been listening to all this talk about managers, and I have to tell you that I don't understand the total lack of respect and how Renteria has been thrown under the bus, and there's been absolutely no criticism at all about how David Ross ran the team this year. Now, I'm not trying to get David Ross fired. He's only been there for 1 year, and I think he's got a great future as a possible pitching coach. But as far as putting a lineup together, you got to be kidding. I mean, he started off with Chris Bryant in the leadoff spot. How did that work out? And he continued to put a 188 hitter in the lineup who shouldn't have been playing left field and certainly shouldn't have been batting cleanup. But Ricky Renteria got fired, and David Ross gets nothing but, hey, he did a great job. I don't see it. I could talk about this for hours, but I'll listen to what you guys think.
Thanks for the call, Jeff. And there's only one guy here. It's just me. And I would say this. Last year, the Cubs, and I'm talking about 2019, the Cubs were tied for the third most errors in Major League Baseball. And they ran into more outs than any team in the game. Their bullpen was awful, and they missed the playoffs. This year, the Cubs returned to the playoffs. They were one of the best defensive teams in baseball. There was the attention to detail running the base paths. Ian Happ improved. Jason Hayward improved. David Bote improved. The bullpen improved. The starting pitching improved. And I don't think, and this is the other reason why I don't get the Tony La Russa criticism. To me, a baseball manager impacts a game less than any other head coach or manager in the major sports that we follow in this country. A head football coach impacts his team a lot more than a baseball manager does. Because a lot of times the lineups that you talk about, those are put together by the people who put the analytics together. And one of the things that I appreciate about what David Ross did this year is he basically said, I'm going to try and not bounce people around a lot in the order and allow guys to work their way out of some of the issues. Now, eventually, late in the year, when you're trying to make a playoff push and win your division, he was forced to make certain changes. But I can't hold David Ross responsible for veteran sluggers not slugging in this weird season, whether it was Chris Bryant, Javi Baez, Anthony Rizzo, whether it's Kyle Schwarber, Wilson Contreras. I mean, they still made the playoffs with all the guys I just mentioned having major off seasons. And I think the reason that there was a change on the South side with Renteria, I mean, obviously you can go and say, hey, the White Sox lost 10 of their last 13 games. They were in the driver's seat to winning the division, and instead they kind of backed into the playoffs as the number three in the American League Central. There were a lot of pitching decisions that were made where you kind of scratched your head, right? A lot of them, including the bullpen in Game 3. And I just think it's very similar to what you saw take place with the Cubs prior to the 2015 season. There's a great manager in Joe Maddon that was available, surprisingly. Rick Renteria did nothing wrong the year before, but you had a chance to get better. Cubs took that chance. And I kind of think that's what the White Sox are seeing here. There's an opportunity now with this nucleus the way it is to be even better. So they feel like there are better managers out there available, and they're going for it. I think if you're a White Sox fan, you should be thrilled that that's the case. Back out to the phones we go. 312-644-6767. Don in Hoffman Estates, you're on the Score. Hi, Don.
How you doing, Zach?
I'm great. What's up?
I just got to say, I just think this is absolutely nuts, the talk about bringing La Russa back. And you opened up by set aside his age and set aside the fact he hasn't managed since 2011. It's like saying, why don't we set aside, you know, Mitch Trubisky's a great quarterback. You know, set aside the fact that he can't throw straight and makes bad decisions. Just making the statement set aside doesn't make it go away. 76 is old. Is there would you want him if he was 106, Zach?
He's not 106. Dusty Baker's 71, and look at what he's doing with the Astros. You know what Jack McKee, and I think Jack.
What's the number?
I don't know what the number is. All I know is if he's healthy, and he's mentally up to it, both physically and mentally up to it, why not?
Because I'm guessing he's not. And tack on the other stuff that, you know, I don't know if you've seen, it's back from 2011 when he's not magically managing. He had a horrible DUI arrest. It's all on a police cam. He's spoken out against Kaepernick, and you saying that he's going to resonate with today's athletes is absolutely off the wall. And Ron Coomer agreeing to it, who works for the Cubs, you know what? Why don't we promote the fact that maybe the Cubs should hire Andy the Clown, the Alamo Brothers, and Gene Leland to work with the Cubs? We could get even in that sense.
And you don't think people can evolve? And I was just talking from a baseball standpoint. I don't know how you can possibly look at Tony La Russa's credentials and say that he's not qualified. You know, being that he is the number three all-time winning manager in Major League Baseball history, he's a Hall of Famer. 6 World Series appearances, 3 championships, been an innovator over the course of his entire managerial career. And as I said earlier, it's not as though he's been resting in some island, sipping mind-enhancing refreshments and not being involved with the game. He's been involved with 3 different front offices since he stepped down as manager, which means he is definitely well-versed with the way the game is managed today. I just think people are... I get if you think he's too old, but if you actually sit down with him and he's in good physical standings, the doctors give him the okay, and mentally he's still sharp because he's still in the game and he feels like he's up to it, why wouldn't you want Tony La Russa to manage your team? Why not? It just makes no sense to me. And in terms of the off-the-field stuff and his views, this has been a very turbulent year that I think has opened up a lot of eyes to maybe people who were stubborn and didn't take a look at the world the way maybe they should. And we've seen people evolve. I'll give you a great example. Speaking of the Kaepernick stuff, did you ever think you would see Roger Goodell putting out a video saying Black Lives Matter and agreeing with the best players, the star players who took ownership of the league during this summer? And did you ever think you'd see Goodell do a complete 180 from where he's been on those issues to the kind of man he is now, to the way the NFL is now? That took some guts, because you know that not every owner agrees with him. And he works for the owners. So people can change. And people can change even when they're older in life. And if you can't, well, you know what? You're not going to really have a lot of success with the players of today if you aren't open-minded to different viewpoints and different ways of thinking. 312-644-6767. Take some more of your phone calls when we come back. Plus, we'll replay what was a terrific interview on Inside the Clubhouse this morning with Joe Maddon. You will not want to miss it. Zach Zabin with you until 5 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room, to candid interviews with basketball legends, to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.